Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So, good evening and welcome to Charlton Live. This is the big match preview. My name is Louis Mendez and joining me online to look ahead to Sunday's trip up to Sinsel Bank to take on Lincoln City. First up, we've got Mr. Lewis Catt. How you doing, Lou?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been all right, mate. It's been all right. It's been bizarre, actually, because I think it's the first week in a while where we've not had a game midweek. So, a bit bored midweek. But, yeah, looking forward to Sunday.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Our first game in the league with Lincoln since 1961. A man who I'm sure already knew that stat, of course. And Nathan Muller. How you doing, Nath?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad. Living the dream.
Yeah. As always. Yeah, how's your Football Manager save going? Because when I spoke to you last night, you were in bad spirits with that.
Yeah, no. It was a bit of a nightmare, to be fair. I mean, I kept us up first season with that two games to go, and I'm about ninth now and about 15 games in, but Bose keeps coming out in the press saying that I'm overachieving and I'm going to fall away. So me and him are having a bit of a public war of words at the moment. So apart from that, oh, and Johnny Williams, I had to release him because he turned down my contract, so I just released him.
Yeah, because I was shocked to find out that you booted not only Lee Bowyer, but also Johnny Jackson out of the club just to get the job. And Johnny Williams, you let go. Not quite as bad as Tom Wallin, who we found out last night has spent just under £70 million on 4 years' worth of Johnny Williams, including a £45 million transfer fee and his wages. So some crazy spending going on in that game. But your lack of respect for Johnny Jackson and Lee Bowyer in the virtual world is very disappointing, Nath.
Well, I mean, with Bowes, it was like, you know, he started having a go at me and I'm doing well at Charlton, Dan. And I mean, Jacko, I offered him the under-23s manager role and he said no.
Well, that's a bit of a kick in the teeth. Yeah, I won't sack you. You can go work with the kids again.
But yeah, apart from that, mate, yeah, we're doing all right at the moment.
Good to see the team. Yeah, good to see the virtual Charlton is run just as badly as real Charlton. Anyway, so on tonight's show, we will be looking ahead, like I say, to that game with Lincoln City up at Sinsel Bank on Sunday. Don't forget it's a Sunday because Lincoln, they're playing Liverpool tonight on the night we record on Thursday. So hopefully they'll be knackered by the time we head up there on Sunday. We're going to hear from Mark Wiley from the Lincolnshire Echo. I spoke to him last night just to gauge how Lincoln have started this season. They've started it very well, just to understand from a Lincoln point of view how they're looking ahead to the game. Also, talk a little bit about the takeover, I guess. Not too much in the way of updates, but we have heard from Thomas Sandgaard overnight on Twitter. Try and delve into what he's talking about. And then, of course, a setback that we've found out is that there will be no fans in stadiums for the foreseeable future. That game against Doncaster last weekend looks like it was a bit of a one-off, unfortunately, so we'll chat about that as well. So let's head straight into takeover talk. I guess that is the talk of the town at the moment, Lewis. You know, we're all eager waiting for updates, but last night there was, Thomas, again, he spoke to a newspaper at the start of the week. He spoke to The Sun, saying he hoped to get the deal done Monday, Tuesday. I mean, I've learned to sort of take that with a bit of a pinch of salt, unfortunately. And you can't, obviously, knock Thomas's enthusiasm for getting the deal done. But it's always the same stumbling block that we come to. And this is what Thomas has said on Twitter last night. Wanted to give fans an update. Discussions have been moving forward positively so far. However, the property piece remains an obstacle. If we can't agree immediately, the players we have lined up to sign will go elsewhere, and that would ruin our season. I personally don't want to be part of a scenario where we cannot sign the players lined up. Let's get this done. So, Lewis, I mean, we come to expect it now, but another snag, it would appear.
Yeah, it seems like we're full of them at the moment, doesn't it? I mean, like you say there, it's kind of it gets quite frustrating with the timelines that are set out in the press. And like you, I've just sort of teaching myself to not really take it too seriously and just wait and see what happens, because there are just so many parties involved with the football club and the transaction of handing that football club over to somebody else. You've kind of got to jump through numerous loopholes and hurdles. You've got Roland with the property, as we've discussed there, which is a stumbling block that the negotiation was set out by another party in Matt Southall and ESI 1, if you like. And then you've got the obvious injunction going on from ESI 2 with Paul Elliott and the Lex Dominus party thing that's going on there. So there are so many people involved that it's just one big mess, really. And I really do appreciate Thomas's enthusiasm and you know, he's been to the games, he's been present on social media, he's been open talking to fans on many different platforms, which is, you know, it's positive and it's something we've always wanted from a potential owner. But the problem with that is people's expectations are raised because we've had our sort of our hands burnt so many times with this, and we had it with Southall when he came in. He was sort of the personality, and he was with the fans, and he was spending time with the trust, and you're seeing everything positive from an outside. And then obviously we all know how that's ended. Not for one second though, I believe that Thomas is in any way going down the same road as Matt Southall. I think we can safely say that. But what the thing is, I think because he's so positive and you know, in the public eye with this and so open with supporters, that people are getting more and more desperate for it to happen. And obviously when this takeover happened last time with ESI 1, we didn't have the same restrictions as we do now with in terms of the transfer embargo and not being able to strengthen a squad. We still had, you know, a limited budget, albeit, but we still managed to bring in enough players to be competitive under Roland. But now we're in a far worse position than we were, and we have no way of bringing players in. And we saw on Saturday against Doncaster just how much that is affecting us, because ultimately the numbers aren't there and we're going to really struggle to compete this season unless something changes, and changes very quickly.
It's that same stumbling block we see every time, isn't it, Nathan? We're talking about takeovers over the course of the last few years. And, you know, every person who came on the scene, you know, the Aussies, Mehmet Dalman, it all seemed to fall apart when they actually had to speak to Roland. Obviously, when ESI first came in, we're thinking, oh, great, Roland's gone. But obviously, he's still got his claws in the club, in the form of the stadium. He has this deal, don't forget, between ESI 1 and himself, that, you know, much was talked about how there was a £50 million clause, but taken in various bonuses. And I was told today, and that goes up to £62 million. I'm hearing this thinking, wow, that's incredible. And then I was speaking to someone who's no longer interested in buying the club, but who did go into some form of negotiations with Roland today. I mean, they told me that they were planning it, or they made a bid of, you're looking at not too far off that £50 million. Which, as soon as I saw that, I was like, that's crazy. But Roland turned it down. So it clearly, Roland seems to think, because he has this deal with ESI 1, who would never in a million years have been able to pay that, in his mind, that is what the value is worth. And he's a stubborn old git, isn't he? And I fear that he's really going to drag this one out. I mean, we've been saying it for years, Nath. Surely he has to see sense at some point, but it doesn't look like, judging by what Thomas said last night, that we're quite there yet.
No, I mean, with Roland, he's, like you say, he's hanging on to it because he's got, you know, he's got a bit of paper or a contract or whatever to say that he's going to get this money from, whether or not they can pay it or not. So if he's going to sort of go back on that and then agree a new deal, he's not going to agree to a deal that makes him worse or off, so to speak, you know. I think buying a club, it's pretty straightforward, because you're just it's more of the operational stuff, and it's the cash flow, and obviously just making it that we can fund ourselves, really. The problem where it all comes about is when you're looking at assets, and the stadium is an asset, and that's what's worth a lot of money, and that's why he's going to hang on to it. But like you say, it was always going to be this bit, that's going to be a sticky point. It's never going to be for the club. It's not like we're full of we've got loads of investors that are outbidding each other to buy the club. And I think that's what the problem is that you've got one seller, one buyer, and if there is a sticking point, then something's got to give somewhere. And it's either, in theory, Roland drops his price, or he goes back on his deal that he's already got, or Thomas overpays the odds somewhat, or the other way is that he buys the club and then lets Roland keep the asset, and then he has to rent it or whatever, it's similar to what Rondo's done at Palace. But yeah, I mean, that's not economical for Thomas.
Yeah. Well, and doing it that way, I mean, the only thing I'm not sure if I've got this wrong, but surely if you buy ESI, then you buy that agreement. So if you buy the club and ESI, and ESI has this £50 million agreement with Roland already, well, surely it'll get to a stage where he will call that in. Maybe I've misunderstood that, but there's absolutely no need for Roland to renegotiate if you've bought ESI and therefore the deal that comes with it. That's the way I understand it. If someone can message me and tell me I'm wrong on that, then feel free. But it, I mean, it's tough, isn't it? I mean, Thomas had talked previously, Nath, as you said, about maybe doing a deal for just the club and not the stadium. But if that was possible, and obviously we haven't even mentioned so far this evening, of course, the injunction that the presumably is stopping that still. It just goes to show how complex this deal is and why it's dragging on and on and on, and we're getting closer and closer and closer to when that transfer window is going to close.
Well, exactly, and just quickly going back on to the deal itself, the reason that Roland probably sold it in the first place is that it was too good to be true that someone offered him that much money to buy the stadium. So now he's got that agreement, and Thomas buys ESI if that's what's going to happen. He's probably looked at it and go, there's no way on earth it's worth that money. So again, something's got to give. But I mean, if he was going to rent it, that's just dead money. He's more or less paying dead money to fund the club as it is on the operating losses. But to then just give money to Roland every month or every year or whatever because they can't agree on a deal, he's just throwing money down the drain from Thomas. And the only way he's going to get out of that is if he gets to the Premier League. And the only way you're going to get to the Premier League is looking at good 2, 3, maybe 4 years of heavy investment, and you're still chasing a pipe dream. Look at Derby. Look at Sheffield Wednesday. You know, it's not guaranteed. So that's I think where it's going to come unstuck, and something's got to give. But it, like you said, it's such a complex situation, and I know I've seen people messaging him and all that, and I know, let people do what they got to do. But for me, it's like, you know, when you're in a car and you're with kids and you're going away and they're like going, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we here yet? Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, I'm sure if he does not, if something happens, the guys at the club or something will be done. And I just think that's what's making it more frustrating, because people are going day by day thinking something's going to happen. And I don't think it's going to be a day. I think you're looking at weeks. And I think we said just off air just now that it wouldn't surprise us if it goes beyond the transfer window. It's not ideal. Of course it ain't, but it wouldn't surprise me if it goes like this, because like you say, it's such a complex situation and there's so many elements that probably a lot of us don't even know from the outset, that we're looking at it and go, well, you know, it's the deal, but there's probably all the little tidbits as well that they can't discuss because of NDAs or whatever. But yeah, it's just madness. And I've said all along, and it's just boring now. It's so boring. I just want to focus on the football, and we'll go on it later, but we can't even do that at the moment. So it's just a bit rubbish at the moment. But we never do anything smoothly, do we? So we just got to hope and pray that something gives in the situation or the standoff or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? The entire time you're answering that, all I could think of, I wonder where Nathan's been going in the car with random children. But we'll come back to that later. Lewis, my fear is, does Thomas Sandgaard go the distance? So far, obviously, the indications are that he will. He's stuck around this long. You know, he's flown to and from the US to come and watch games. He's spoken to fans, he's spoken to press, he's spoken to everyone, and he is determined to get this deal done. But, you know, even the best of us have been worn down by Roland's antics over the years, and I fear that happens next with Thomas. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's going to be a concern, definitely. The whole time that this deal isn't tied up, there's always going to be that concern that he will be put off by it by Roland. We know, as we've said already, he's a tough negotiator and stubborn, and we didn't really... Yeah, he didn't give us the best time, but we've obviously protested. And you could almost look at it and think that he could be doing this as a bit of a personal attack, really, a bit of revenge for what we all went through over that period when he was in charge. But Thomas has shown all the sort of the right signs that he is in this for the long haul. He's really invested into the club and everything as well. But my concern is that the whole time that he is negotiating and trying to get this deal over the line, it is already costing him money. You know, he's already travelling over from the US on this, I think, was his second trip now that he's been here. You've also got the whatever he's paying for the Freshfield lawyers to sort of look through things to try and get this deal over the line as well. That's not going to come cheap. So he's already investing into trying to get this deal done. But it's just, you know, how long does he view this as a potential opportunity to get it through over the line? Or does he look at it like almost, you know, you're trying to flog a dead horse and we're just not going to get there? Because there are so many hurdles, as I say already, and so many parties to negotiate and overcome. And unfortunately, those parties ahead of Thomas, the likes of Roland and ESI 1 and 2, are going to want their cut of the crust. And although ESI 1 and 2, you could say, have put little to nothing into the club, Paul Elliott's claiming he's put in however much to keep the running costs going and keep the club going and bills paid and everything. We say that nothing was invested by Tanoon when he was here. But people are going to want their fair cut of whatever they've put into it. And there are a lot of obstacles before this gets cleared. And ultimately, as Nath said there, I just can't see anything being possible until this court hearing's out of the way and the injunction's gone. Because ultimately, the Roland thing is going to be the hardest part to negotiate. Actually handing the club over from ESI to Thomas, taking the injunction out of it, should be an easy process. You know, it should work for all parties. There's no way that Paul Elliott wants to be in this for the long run. You can't tell me that he does. He's not shown any sort of intent to do that. And Tanoon wanted to get rid as soon as the fallout became public. And it's that side of it should be the easy side. And you can almost come to Roland later and negotiate what comes with that agreement with purchasing the Valley and Sparrows Lane. But unfortunately, this injunction now is preventing us from getting the important first step out of the way and making us, you know, be able to focus on the football on the pitch and just let this happen in the background when it comes to the assets. But because of that injunction at the moment, we're completely stuck, and everything on the pitch now is going to, you know, as consequence of that, is going to suffer, because we do not have a competitive squad to compete at the end of the table that Lee Bowyer and Johnny Jackson want our squad to be at. And if we do want to get to that position, then this injunction needs to be lifted and something needs to be sorted so that we can compete for now and get the assets and that complication out of the way over a longer period of time. But at the moment, I just can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I'd say a few weeks ago, I was optimistic when we were both at QPR doing the, when I was commentating for the Checker Trade game at Wimbledon. I felt like that was maybe the first step in the right direction. And 24 hours later, we're looking at another appeal, and then the injunction comes in place 2 weeks after that. So there are so many frustrations, and, you know, Charlton fans are going to be sick of it. As Nath said, you want to focus on the football, but ultimately the future of the football club at the moment is at stake, not just because of this, but because of what we're going to talk about later with fans and everything as well. And it's a really delicate time for a football club at our level, and all this uncertainty off the pitch is not going to help one bit.
Yeah, and it still doesn't bear thinking about, I guess, Nathan, what would happen if Thomas did decide enough was enough and pulled out. And like I said, there's no indication currently, but that's always the fear. One question we should ask, I guess, Nathan, is, you know, I mentioned earlier, often there's been a timeline sort of put on it by Thomas himself when we've spoken to him. And, you know, I spoke to him after that temporary, after the first injunction hearing at the QPR game. And he talked about hoping to get it done by the end of that week. And then we spoke to him on the Saturday and he said he'd extended his stay and he was hoping to get it done by that week. And then he was hoping to get it done by West Ham and have enough players in. Then he was hoping to get it done Monday, Tuesday this week, he said in the Sun. Do you think Thomas maybe ought to stop saying that because it's getting the people maybe more concerned? I mean, this is the first time today or last night. It's the first time where he's sort of talked about something being a real obstacle and not said, you know, but we'll still have it done in the next few days. Do you think Thomas would be wise to maybe just sort of tone it down slightly and just keep things a little bit more realistic? Or do you think that might be just the American in him, you know, the Danish-American in him? He's get up and go, get everything done in the next 5 minutes.
I think no one can doubt his enthusiasm. I think if it was a... I would say if it was any other club, and then I was going to stop myself, but no, I'll go with that. If it was any other club and any other takeover, he probably would have just went in the background, done the business, done the deal, and he would have come out and it would have been all happy days. For me, I think the only reason he's come out is for him to be shown publicly his interest in the, in my opinion, in the thought process that it might sway the legal case of getting the deal done and just getting the whole thing sorted sooner. That's what I think he's done. Because if you look back at the beginning, like you were saying, he was coming out saying this and that, and it was all great, blah, 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 blah. But then since the second injunction thing, he's gone sort of, he's saying he's coming over, but he's, that sort of enthusiasm's waned a little bit. Not because I'm saying he doesn't want the club. I'm just saying I think he's probably realised he can only do so much now. And it is down to the fact that he's now got to agree a price. But yeah, it's difficult. I mean, there's every chance that he can pull out. But for me, I think that he's an enthusiastic person. He's built his business up from nothing. You can tell he's quite extrovert in terms of the old David Brent guitar sort of scenario and stuff. But well, he doesn't do that, but he just reminds me of David Brent. But yeah, he's obviously out there, but he's a shrewd businessman. And I think he just mainly done it just to try and force the issue a little bit from the legal perspective, which it wouldn't work. The over here law's law over there, they're all bonkers over there anyway. But we just have to wait and see, mate. The thing that bugs me with the whole thing is it's the injunction, it is what it is. The thing that annoys me is the Paul Elliott, the director's test or whatever it is, because if he passed it, we probably would get players in, but that's not even being done. So you can't even go, right, pass him, let him get the players in, and then you can sort it after whenever that is, November, December, January, whenever, because then we can still sign players. I think that's the main thing, is that we're not able to get players in to challenge. We all want a nice owner, but the first and foremost is the pitch and what happens on the pitch. But that can't even happen. And it looks like they're mutually exclusive. So it's just frustrating. But I think all in all, he's obviously just sat back and thought, you know what, I might have to pipe it down a little bit now, because not only is it, if it not, he's making a rod for his own back a little bit, but every time he keeps drip feeding stuff, you're going to get people, like I said earlier, messaging him and LinkedIning him and all that. But I mean, it's not my sort of game, but people do what they got to do. But it just makes people a lot more, what's the word am I looking for? A bit more apprehensive and just a bit more impatient, because it sounds like it's round the corner, but I don't think it is. But we've just got to wait and see, mate.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? It's a long, hard waiting game. Macca tweeted in saying, not long now, apparently sometime within the next 12 months. Probably referencing that LinkedIn message from Thomas Sandgaard to a fan, saying he hopes to get it done within the next year. Hopefully he was just sort of playing along with a little bit of a joke there. Ben says, not happening, mate. Brexit will reach a conclusion before we get a takeover done. Yeah, it is dragging on and on and on. As Lewis mentioned, Lewis, as you mentioned earlier as well, you know, something else that's come up this week and is making it tougher for football clubs all over the place. And, you know, the National League were having a meeting today amongst themselves. EFL, we're playing on. We're playing with no fans for the foreseeable future now. You know, the current raft of limitations that have been brought in for the government for general life are said to be lasting the next 6 months. Now, if that will bleed into the world of football and there's going to be no crowds for football, then you're talking about pretty much nearly the end of the season. You know, maybe a month or two left of the season to go before fans can go back at best. So I mean, this could be big. Now everyone, we've seen tweets from people who work within this club and people who've dealt with this situation at other clubs. You know, even Millwall, you know, you saw how much work they've done to get ready to have fans back, and it's all gone up in the air. Now it does sort of pose the question that is it unfair that, you know, you can go into a pub pubs have done their work as well. You know, I've been to a few pubs since they've reopened, and there's you know, shields up, there's social distancing, you know, the Hilltop up at Sidcup. I've never been in such a regimented pub. It was really well organised. There's a few different ones that means they've been able, a few different rules they've brought in that means they've been able to get people in. Now football can do this, and it's effectively outside as well, so it does feel, Lewis, that it's a little bit unfair, and perhaps the rules could have been a bit more targeted.
Definitely. I think that the decision has been rushed in a bit of a panic with the strengthening of restrictions again. I think that going back to Saturday, really, I haven't felt safer in an environment post-lockdown than I did at the Valley on Saturday. I thought it was extremely well organised. I thought the staff did an incredible job considering the short turnaround they had. You know, there was everything that you would need to feel COVID secure. You had temperature checks on the way in, social distancing in the queues. The concourses were closed, all but the toilets. There was a social distancing queue in there. The seats were well spaced out and you wore a mask for 90 minutes. So I don't understand why you can sit in a pub and watch a game for 90 minutes until 10 p.m. with, you know, without a mask on in a group of six on a table, probably not 2 meters away from the table next to you inside, but you can't sit outside where it's, you know, less likely to catch it anyway with a mask on watching your football club. I think that this all roots to football fans being tarnished with a brush that we cause trouble and we can't be trusted. And I think Saturday shows that football fans can be trusted because they are so desperate to get back watching their football clubs and getting back to a bit of normality on a Saturday that you'll do what's required. You know, there wasn't a single bit of Saturday where you looked at any supporters and thought, oh, you know, maybe they're taking it, you know, a bit overexcited, standing up, jumping around, no mask on, seeing friends. You know, there were so many people there. Yeah, I saw Tom, but I didn't, you know, we were sat completely separately. I wasn't sat standing, you know, not even one person away from him chatting and catching up. We were chatting from a safe social distance because that's what the club needed in front of officials to get this over the line. So you just feel like all that hard work is going to get put to waste. And there's no way that this can go on in a football sense until March, because I heard an interview with Darren McAntony earlier at Peterborough that, you know, 19 out of the 24 clubs in League One could easily go bust. And to do that to an industry, especially in our country where the football ladder is, you know, is so well built up, you know, that some of the clubs that are in League Two, League One, all the way up to the Premier League have huge followings and they are huge football clubs and they are part of people's everyday lives. And what it does to people to not be able to go and see their football club as and when they want, regardless of restrictions, because ultimately we don't get attendances right now that mean that there would be an issue with capacity or anything. But you have to look at how it would affect people. And you know, it's different for myself included. Like I personally felt so good on Sunday after being able to go to the Valley, ignoring the result completely. I felt personally really good that I was able to go there and blow off some steam from, you know, everyday life stress. And now I potentially won't be able to do that until March. And that will affect people, you know, it will affect other people a lot more than it will affect me as well. And it's a concern financially for a lot of football clubs and it's a concern for supporters. And I think that something has to be revisited in government before March, 100%. I think that I understand if they wanted to postpone some pilot events this weekend, but it would be frustrating for clubs like Millwall that have put all that effort into, you know, the external turnstiles and everything to get fans in safely. That's a financial burden that they won't be able to get money back on now. And I think that there has to be something put in place where a limited capacity can be allowed, because you can go and watch step six or whatever, but you can't go and see elite clubs. And I understand that step six is much more space and not really enclosed stadiums, but ultimately you're still outside and it's a safe social distance. So I don't really understand why it's not being given the opportunity to be tested further, because I thought Saturday was a massive success on Charlton's behalf. And it seems like Shrewsbury and other clubs did very well with it as well. And I think that it needs more, if anything, it needs more trials to prove that it works. And that will save a hell of a lot of clubs, even if you are only letting in, you know, 20% of people for the next couple of months and then increase it by 10% and then review it again in March. As long as there is some staggered return, then at least fans will have, you know, football clubs will have some financial income when it comes to gate receipts, because they need it. It's over a third of most football clubs' revenue streams, and a lot of football clubs are going to feel the effects of that if they can't bring any fans in the next 6 months.
Did you get that third stat from Katrine's rant from ages ago?
I hope not. I hope not. But I think McAntony mentioned it earlier about, you know, how it's such a huge part of people's revenue when it comes to football clubs and season ticket sales, you know, alone for us. I mean, of course, they're not as high as they would be usually because we're in League One and the ownership has played a part in people maybe holding on to see what happens. But there'd still be a good, what I think it's about, there were 3,500 purchased before the 21 game season ticket went on sale or whatever, and there'll be people that purchased after that. So ultimately that's going to come back to supporters in the form of the cash so we can watch it on Valley Park. So there's still going to be a loss there regardless of them selling the season tickets, because they've got to fork out in refunds of some extent to pay for people to watch it on Valley Pass anyway. So it's a big hit there. You have to allow a percentage of fans in to watch it. Otherwise, as so many, 60-70% of football clubs in this country will go bust, and the football league system will collapse, and they have to look at it properly and see that. They're saying that it's less risk to catch it outdoors. Well, then let outdoor sport continue and let fans prove that it works like we did Saturday, and don't just brush it aside because politicians seem to think that football fans have this sort of tag of being irresponsible and brutish and getting drunk and stuff. It just let people prove that it works like it did Saturday. And, I'd really be interested to see if anyone that made that decision actually even bothered reading any reports that were put forward from how the Charlton game went, how the Shrewsbury game went, because if they'd have seen it, then I think that they would have to agree that there is little to no chance of catching COVID as long as you behave in the manner that the club enforced, and everybody that was there Saturday 100% did that.
Yeah, I mean, talking obviously of brutish people who enjoy getting drunk, Nath. Yourself obviously. The only reason I could think why they might be slightly concerned, about an industry that we saw on Saturday, you can get in and out of fairly socially distanced, is probably the travel to and from the games. But at the same time, they did give staggered arrival times, because if they got the crowd up to even 4,000 or 5,000 out in the valley, I imagine the trains an hour before kickoff would be reasonably busy. But it's just a case of it, like, why can't they just allow for staggered arrival times, tell as many people to drive if possible, which obviously isn't great for the environment, but in this current situation, probably better than everyone cramming onto trains. I mean, though, just little things like that, surely they could be overcome. Surely there must be a way to work these things out. And I understand that in the current circumstances, if you're trying to hammer home the message that you don't want people meeting up, then maybe it does make it difficult if you're getting a few thousand to go to football. But there must be a way to, if we are going to be living with this thing for a while, which may well be the case, and that there has to be that they have to be able to find the right balance rather than just cutting off everything, surely.
Yeah, it will. I mean, for me, I could go on for ages about how inconsistent the government is. I mean, I don't think it's the government have sort of looked at football in general and think that we couldn't be, we misbehave brutishly or whatever the quote was. But I think it's just Boris going off on one, isn't he? I think he's just over-exaggerating, not thinking things through. You can understand, I think, as Lewis said earlier, if you sort of postponed it for a couple of weeks or a month or whatever. But if realistically, I honestly think that it won't be till March. I mean, when COVID first come around, I don't think there'd be football for probably until next year. And that came around. I think it'll all sort itself out. Everyone will calm down again. And it's just the inconsistency that really annoys me about, how they go, we're going to give 50% off on food, go and help yourself, go out and enjoy yourself. And now it's like, oh, no, you can't go out now. Yeah, you've caused COVID. It's like, come on, mate, do me a favour. But there will be a way where they'll have to let it go, because it's not only football clubs, it's the not even the football club itself, it's the local economy, it's the travel, all the shops around it, mental well-being, and that sort of stuff. So I think it'll come around soon, but yeah, it's just baffling to see why they've just said it might be 6 months. I can't envisage it being till March. I really can't. Maybe till December. I don't know. You don't know with all the cases that are coming in. But I don't know. But there's so many inconsistencies of it. It's just that I could go on for hours, but it's not really the show for baffling on about government policy. But
yeah, we don't want to get too deep into politics on this show, of course. But I did listen to PMQs yesterday. They did seem to say that they're going to see what packages they could put together for sports club, or certainly discuss it. So hopefully, I mean, football clubs are massive, not just to the supporters, but to their communities as well. And we know, the government has, depending on your view on policy, but they've taken some action which they hope will try and save companies and stuff. Obviously, whether it's up to you, whether you decide whether it's good enough or not good enough, but you know, you'd hope they do that for football clubs as well. Right, let's have a quick break. When we come back, we'll be time to start to look ahead to Sunday's trip up to Lincoln City.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across. Bowers there. Pierce is there. Bowers with a header. And it's Charlie.
Yes!
Oh, it's
yes!
It! Oh, he's got it! Oh, Patrick Barr! The absolute German beauty! Woo! Dreamland! Charlton have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it, Tom!
Get in! Come on! What a time to be here!
Here at Wembley!
Oh my word! Oh my word!
Charlton Live.
Right, welcome back to Charlton Live. This is the big match preview. We're heading up to Lincoln City on Sunday. Don't forget the game's been moved back a day because they're playing Liverpool. Was it probably kicking off in about 5 minutes in terms of time of recording? Although obviously by the time you've listened, they would have kicked off. Hopefully Liverpool will be kicking them all over the pitch and tiring them out for Sunday. But they've had a great start to the season at Lincoln City. And I wanted to, it's the first time we've played them since 1961 in the league. We had a couple of cup games in the 80s. I think we drew against them in the League Cup. And this was when it was a two-legged tie. So we played them twice in the mid-80s. But the first league tie since 1961. So we know absolutely nothing about Lincoln City other than the fact that they've got that cool imp on their badge. And I was Googling that last night. The imp is actually up in the cathedral in Lincoln. So when COVID's all done, that's something I want to go and visit because it looked really cool. But anyway, I wanted to know a bit more about Lincoln City and Michael Apperton's side. So I spoke to Mark Wiley from the Lincolnshire Echo and asked him how the mood is after that decent start to the season over at Sinsel Bank.
Yeah, I mean, apart from the fact that obviously the fans can't get into games, there's a general mood of positivity about the team. They're playing some really good football. Michael Apperton's completely revamped the squad over the summer, 12 new signings, and they're playing some really nice football. And they've had a fantastic start. They've come through two rounds of the Carabao Cup and now set to play Liverpool. They've won on penalties in the EFL Trophy against Scunthorpe, and they've won the first two league games as well against tough opposition in Oxford and MK. So it couldn't have gone any better so far.
Yeah, I mean, what were the expectations like this year? Obviously, last year was their first one back in League One, and they were 16th as the, well, they ended up 16th after the curtailment of the season. But you said obviously they've done a lot of business in the summer. What do you think are the aims for this season?
Well, I think everyone was quite encouraged, and I was pleasantly surprised by the quality of some of the signings. Like everybody else, the playing budget's been absolutely slashed, and even before the pandemic, they were looking to get the wage bill down and have a younger squad with players they can develop and potentially sell on in the future. So I think with that in mind, there was optimism that they could certainly improve on last season. I think my pre-season prediction was about 11th. And I think, I think top 10 is certainly doable. I still think playoffs will be pushing it a little bit. But I don't think they'll be in trouble at the bottom of the table. And I certainly think they can push for top 10.
And how have the fans taken to Michael Apperton over the last couple of years? Obviously, yeah, he's massive boots to fill in the form of the Cowley brothers.
Yeah, the fans have really taken to him, actually. A completely different character to Danny Cowley. And as you say, massive boots to fill. But he's very much his own man. He's got a completely different way of playing, different types of players he wants. He's very good from my point of view to deal with, just as Danny was really, but in a different way. He's a very straightforward guy. You ask him a straight question, you get a straight answer. He's very open with the fans. I think the fans have really bought into what he's trying to do, and they can see the plan. He's made it very clear what he wants to do, how he wants the team to play. And I certainly think the fans have bought into that. There was a bit of a hangover from the Cowley's departure. They were a bit up and down last season as Appleton brought in his new players and changed the style of play. There was a few peaks and troughs. They had some great wins at home. They beat Sunderland and Peterborough and Ipswich, but the away form was pretty poor. But as I say, he's changed the team, and they're very much set up. I think they're going to be a good away team this season. They're very much set up to play on the counter attack, and the teams have played so far. The two wins they've had in the league have been against teams who've had a lot of possession, and they break at pace, and that's one of the main weapons so far.
And who are the danger men that the Addicts should be wary of on Sunday?
I would say, Liam Bridcut's just come back into the side. He's kind of a talisman of the team. He came in on loan from Forest second half of last season, and I was pleasantly surprised that they managed to get him on a permanent deal. I mean, he spent most of his career in the Championship, so he'll be sort of sitting front of the back four. He's a very important player. George Grant, one of the few players left from the Cowley era, he'll probably line up on the left of the front three. Very creative player. Dead ball specialist, and he's been given more responsibility this season. Well, he seems to be relishing it. I really like James Jones, who they brought in from Crewe, goal scoring midfielder. I imagine he'll weigh in with a few goals this season. Scored a cracker at Bradford in the League Cup last week. It's a bit of a cliche, but no one really stood head and shoulders above the rest of the season. It's been a bit of a team effort, and he's tinkered with the team slightly. He's made a couple of changes for each game to try and freshen things up, because obviously they're playing a lot of games at the moment, Saturday, Tuesday, so far. And the players who've come in have done well, and they've got a couple of lads on loan from West Brom. Callum Morton, who did really well for Northampton last season, scored in the playoff final. Striker, and Alex Palmer, the goalkeeper, he's been immense so far. He's not put a foot wrong. Mm. And he was in goal for Plymouth last season, and he got promoted. So, yeah, there's a few players who've done well so far. I could probably reel off, six or seven players who've had very good starts in the season. Mm.
Now, of course, all the attention this week will have been on Liverpool. Still got to get that game out of the way before our one on Sunday. But how do you think Lincoln will go into this game? It's the first league meeting between the two sides since 1961, so clearly not a lot of familiarity there.
No.
But how do you think? Do you think they'll fear Charlton? Do you think they'll look to take the game to them?
I don't think it'll be interesting to see how they play, because I think home game so far against Oxford sort of dominated possession. He had 60% possession, but he didn't do a great deal with it, so I don't know how Charlton like to play, whether they like to dominate the ball, but if they do, I think that'll play into Lincoln's hands. But I think they'll try and take the game to Charlton where they can. They probably won't fear Charlton, probably respect them, but they won't fear them. And after the start they've made, there'll be a lot of confidence. I mean, if they were to do well against Liverpool, I mean, I wouldn't expect them to beat Liverpool, but if they can put in a respectable performance, I think they'll go into the Charlton game sort of full of confidence.
There we go, Mark Wiley from the Lincolnshire Echo. Like I say, at time of recording, he'll be at Sinsel Bank watching them take on Liverpool. So by the time of recording, hopefully we find out they lost 10-0 and lost every single player to injury somehow. Obviously it's been a great start to the season, Lewis, for the Imps, and second season in League One. I imagine they'll be going into this game looking at us beaten by Doncaster last week with a fair bit of confidence.
Yeah, definitely. They've been a side that have started the season strongly, came up last season and did okay, and they got a good result last weekend against MK Dons. And yeah, they've got some decent players in there. They've sat comfortably in. What I say comfortably is quite early on, isn't it? But they're sat second at the moment and unbeaten. So that's an achievement, really. And, Michael Appleton as well is a manager who's sort of been around a bit and has got quite a bit of experience at this level. I think he's been at Oxford and he's been at a few other places as well. And has been one of those managers that's kind of sort of at one point in his career was hovering around, you know, pushing for the bottom half of the Premier League almost. I think he was in charge at Blackburn at a point too. And he'll have a lot of experience and there'll be a side that will want to, you know, they've sort of done the bit of staying in the division last year and they had a really sort of impressive season when they were promoted from League Two as well. So they'll probably be looking at where they can improve to try and maybe push for the top six this year or a top half finish. And we'll have to sort of be at our best and play a lot better than we did Saturday. I think we had promising spells in the first half Saturday, but our defensive frailties were you know, they were sort of there for all to see once we'd gone one down, we sort of fell apart. So we're going to have to try and bounce back. I think that at least they're playing Liverpool tonight. I mean, there'll be some tired legs in that Lincoln squad on Sunday, and hopefully we'll be in a position where we can go out there and try and get something out of the game, because the first performance of the season against Crewe, I thought we looked quite good. And it's just I don't think the pressure of having the fans back in on Saturday really played a part. I just think that Doncaster were better than us overall, so there'll be a lot of work done this week. And I think, you know, at the moment, in terms of changes, we can't really make a huge amount because we haven't got any players. So Bowie will be sort of relying heavily on those players, kicking on and learning from the mistakes. And he'll want to see a reaction from the boys on Sunday. And hopefully we can go out there, grind out a decent result.
Yeah, Nathan, as we heard there from Mark, obviously they've made quite a few signings in the summer, Lincoln City. But sometimes you get those where teams don't really gel. But obviously Lincoln have kicked off really well. I wonder, another team that's come off of this 6 month break, it's interesting to see how different sides react to that as well, and because, you know, many of those players won't have been able to play any football in that time. Where do you think us actually playing in that time has made any difference at all to how we started and how other teams have started? I mean, I don't think results have really stood that theory up, but do you think that could have an effect?
I'm not sure. I mean, this season's so weird. I mean, even if you look to if you look at the Premier League and the result that the other lot down the road got against Man United the other day, you can see that it's teams that the first sort of three, four games, no one's really going to be on par. Even at Liverpool, you know, when they played Leeds, I know Leeds gave a really good game, but no one looks sharp. And, you know, looked at us against Crewe, and then you looked at us against Donny for the first 20 minutes until they scored, and then we were two different sides. I think that it's going to take a few games for it to come back in, because they've not had a full pre-season. No team has, really. And you're using cup games as sort of friendlies. I'm not really going to be getting too down about sort of it's at least 5-6 games, because it's going to take for a while to get people in the swing of things, and then you've got the transfer window in October as well. So I just think for the first few games it just depends which team turns up. I mean, for all we know, we can go and pump Lincoln 4-0 and it would be like, you know, it'd be on form, like they've had a decent start and they've signed some good players, like you said. But I just think this season it's so difficult to gauge for every league, not even just League One, even going up to the higher echelons of the Premier League. So I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference, no. But I just think at least one thing we've got is that we know we're probably more than likely going to have the same 11 every week. So, I mean, we ain't got much choice with that. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tricky game. But I'm not really going to delve too much and start jumping out of windows yet until, you know, at least 5-6 games in, maybe after the Sunderland game, get that one out of the way.
All right, so you've penciled in when you plan on starting jumping out of windows. It's got to that stage already. I prefer early lockdown when you were just staring at trees. But
talking to the trees, wasn't I?
Yeah, although I imagine you still do that.
But, no comment.
I actually bought myself a ladder this week purely so I can go and cut down the top of my tree. But I won't get into the excitement of me buying a ladder this week. It did arrive today though, and I was very excited because I've never owned a ladder before. But that's one of the things when you move house and you actually
Amazon
have your own
Prime,
tree.
Mate, isn't it? It's great, yeah. Amazon Prime.
Yeah. Amazon, oh yeah. Amazon excellent, Prime. Excellent. Yeah. And now I'm the proud owner of a ladder. Anyway, let's get away from that excitement, Lewis, and concentrate on the game again. I mean, Nathan mentioned it there, Lou, that obviously but we haven't got much room for manoeuvrability at the moment. Bo was scathing, wasn't he, after the game against Doncaster? You would have heard it on Sunday's pod about how the almost as if the players are getting a little bit too comfortable because they know there's not really too many of them who can be dropped, because otherwise Nathan will be in the team, basically, you know, jumping out of tree injuries or not. So it's time for those players who perhaps would have been dropped to react, I guess, this week. That'll be what Bayer's hoping for from them.
Definitely. Yeah, there's players that were on the bench last week that, you know, I'd like to see pushing to try and get in that side. You know, Johnny Williams was on the bench, but maybe through the fact that he might not be 100% fit yet, didn't get a huge amount of football at the back end of last season. So we know his injury record, so he's probably adjusting. But Aaron Ostrom is someone I'd like to see come in and be given a go, because he really impressed me when we played Wimbledon, and I thought he had a decent game at Swindon as well. And he's someone that we've seen, maybe not in a Charlton shirt so much, but for Walsall, especially against us. But at this level, has a lot of quality and ability, and I'd like to see him come into the side and be given an opportunity to show what he can do, because I just think that he hasn't quite had the opportunity yet. But when he first came in, you look back at the Forest game last year, almost a year ago, well, over a year ago now, he was unbelievable. I think we were in general that game in the first half, but he looked really, really good. And given, you know, we all know that he's quite short and he probably can be knocked off the ball quite easily, but he does find these little pockets of space and he can score goals and he can open up play. He's a good passer of the ball. I'd like to see him given an opportunity, and I just think that there is room in there. I don't think anyone can really feel safe in that 11, regardless of the issues with the squad size. I think that there were a few below par performances on Saturday. I can forgive Prattley because he's been played out of position and he's been so reliable for so long. I thought Ben Perrington was beaten too easy for the John Jules goal. I thought that Alfie Doughty probably had his worst game in a Charlton shirt. I thought he looked a little bit off it. I didn't see a huge amount of Macaulay Bon either, and we're looking for him for goals, really. I was impressed with Connor Washington. I think that's 2-2 for him, so I think that he's settled in quite well, and Alex Gilby had a couple of good opportunities as well. So I'd say that those two have done himself no harm whatsoever. But I think with, you know, Jake Forster-Caskey potentially, Albie as well, and Alfie could maybe see some time out of the team this weekend if he does really change it up. I do think Alfie's probably too important to take out at the moment, but his performance on Saturday wasn't to the levels that we've grown to see from him so far. So whether he drops out and Johnny maybe starts on the wing, or if he gives Oz a go as well, I think there are changes to be made. But as you've touched on already, we really haven't got a huge amount of options. So he's not going to ring any wholesale changes. Maybe he'll look at changing shape to try and make it work for the personnel that might have missed out on Saturday. But ultimately, we've got a squad to work with, and it's not a big one. So any changes really are going to be kind of minute, and we're just going to be relying on those players coming off the bench and making an impact and trying to stake their claim to get a starting spot more often.
What about Charlie Barker, Nath? What do you reckon? Obviously, he started so well, but, you know, 17-year-old, we don't want to be overplaying him at this stage. Had his most difficult game yet against Doncaster, where obviously he scored the own goal. So he started off okay in that game, but then as Doncaster started to take control of the game, then he, along with everyone else in the team, faded. I'm not saying he played particularly badly, but we were under pressure in that game, and as we said, he went on to score the own goal. And in any normal circumstance, you don't keep a 17-year-old in the firing line for too long. I'm just trying to work out, if he did take Charlie out, maybe Prats could drop into the defence, and then there's, you know, there's the likes of Levitt or Lapsley, or even Vennings or Stimmer, who can all come into the midfield. So there are choices on that bench, along with Johnny Williams as well, actually, who could fill some gaps around here. Do you think that's a decision Lee Bowyer may have to make?
He might have to, because, but then again, unless you play Lapo there, it's hard for him, really. I mean, with Charlie, it's right. I mean, we're coming up again, another team who are really aggressive, really physical. We've got some big players in there, like Joe Walsh and Jason Shackle, and they've got some big, big players. So you don't want to, and especially after last week, we lost, scored an own goal. It's so easy for a kid that young for him to crumble. So it's a case of, now, does he take him out and protect him, or does he go sink or swim? And I think the problem with playing Charlie at right back, Which it feeds into the, for me, in my opinion, is that the Osten my problem, which I've said many times how much I like him as a player, but the difficulty is when you play against teams who play with a box and they'll mark him out the game, what they'll do is they'll just force you out wide. And then if you look at our fullbacks offering our width, which is Ben Parent, who don't like going forward or can't do anything going forward, in my opinion. And then you've got Charlie Barker, who's a natural centre-half. So what you saw on Saturday is Doncaster just let them two have it. Go on, then do what you've got to do. And what did they do? They had to come back every time. So I think that's the dilemma that Bose is going to have. So for me, I would put Lapper at right back. I know it's not his natural position, but at least he gives you a bit of energy and a little bit more technical ability going forward. But that's what I would do. And I'd probably keep Deji and Prats there for now. But if it stays as it is, he's going to play more games without a doubt, Charlie. And it's not going to do him any harm. But I mean, I think Bo's already come out and said that the plan was for him, you know, to get some under 23 minutes this year before the season kicked off. And then with obviously Piercy being injured and then all these other the players that were lined up supposedly and they're not coming in at the moment, he's having to play him. But it's picking the games that he can play because we've got no natural right back. You know, I know Charlie can play there, but if you've never been a natural right back, it's hard to just slot in there, you know. So it's a difficult one for Bose, but he's got, what else can he do? You know, there's not much else he can do. So the only thing I can think of is they have to play Charlie in the games that he probably think he's got more chance to win in his individual battles. Because if he gets bullied and he's not playing well, what are you going to do? Just take him off. You know what I mean? I mean, what if you're 2-0 down after half an hour and he's getting bullied, push left, right and centre? Are you just going to bring him off after half an hour? It's not going to do him any good, is it? So I think he's just got to be careful with Charlie. But I mean, Charlie's showed sign of being very comfortable, being assured, you know, the crew game and the cup game. But I think it's just Bose's picking the right times for Charlie to play and where to play him.
Excellent stuff. Right, a couple more tweets came in on the game. John Cooper said, obviously, you want the lads to get 3 points, but in my mindset, the matches and results at present pale into insignificance at the worry of the club going under if a deal cannot be reached to rid us of the poison we've endured for far too long. Yeah, good point there, John. And MICFC says, I'm sure that Bo will just watch tonight and then copy what Jurgen Klopp does. Can't see a problem. We've both got the same depth in our squads. Well, at least we've got the same colour shirts. Yeah, I think we could only wish to have the same depth that Liverpool have. They're playing Virgil van Dijk in a cup game at Lincoln. They've obviously taken that one quite seriously. Right, we've almost run out of time on the big match preview. Let's just get some predictions then ahead of Sunday. Nathan, how do you see it going?
I reckon I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah? Better than nothing?
Yeah, better than... It's not the most positive of results, but I think... After the performance that we had after when they scored, because I think before like Doncaster scored, I thought we were absolutely brilliant, and we just seemed to lose our heads after that. But I think if we come out and start fast, you should be all right. I think if we start shaky again, because they're on an up, depending on the result tonight. Imagine if they get a draw or something tonight. Imagine what they're going to be on cloud nine. They'll have another 110%, if that's possible, in their tank.
Well, they've just gone 1-0 down after 9 minutes, actually. Shaqiri. So, yeah, batter them, Liverpool. Do them. Go for the kill.
But, yeah, I reckon we'll get a nice little 1-1 sort of cagey, aggressive away performance.
Nice. And, Lewis, how do you see it going?
I think it's got draw written all over it. I think they'll be tired from today, but I think they'll probably have enough to, they'll go one up on us, I think, and we'll fight back in the second half and equalise. But I'd take a point, to be fair, because they've started strongly. So yeah, I'll go 1-1 as well, actually.
Excellent stuff. Right, we've come to the end of this week's big match preview. Thanks to all of you who have listened. Don't forget, we'll be back on Sunday. It won't be me because I'll be making my way back from Lincoln, but Tom will be hosting Sunday's pod with all the hot reaction, hot off the press from the, or it could be hot reaction, depending on who's doing it, I guess. hot off the press, the reaction from the game at Lincoln. So don't forget to get your tweets and emails in after the game because Tom will read them out on the show, so make sure you do that. Thank you to Nathan and to Lewis for joining me on this week's big match preview.
Cheers, mate.
A very hot big match preview, if you don't mind me saying so. I've been Louis Mendes. Thanks for listening. Charlton Live will be back here on Sunday evening. We'll see you later.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.